Blog Talk Radio. Unbelievable. Let me just tell you. So, naturally, we have quite a bit on President Trump. Joe Manchin sat down for an interview with Cenk Uygur. I'll be breaking down some crucial parts of that discussion. Joan Walsh, Hillary Clinton lover, Bernie Sanders hater, alleged liberal. she has a critique of Ivanka Trump. That shows how progressive she is. Joe Scarborough went on Stephen Colbert's show and is getting just fawning praise from the media. You'll see why. So let's start with the big story, though, the big story that we didn't have the opportunity to get to yet. And that's, of course, Donald Trump Jr. Oh, boy. Oh, boy. I know a lot of people are waiting for this one. All right, let's do it. We now have the direct emails from Donald Trump Jr. that Democrats are claiming is proof of collusion with the Kremlin to get Donald Trump elected. Now, Donald Trump Jr. actually released these emails himself, and still people are saying, well, I mean, but look at the content of it. It's clear that this is some sort of an admission. This requires legal action, and it requires it immediately. So let's go through some of it here. I'll break it down. He's talking with a guy named Rob Goldstone, who's a British-born former tabloid reporter and entertainment publicist. And Goldstone claims to be writing on behalf of a Russian pop star named Emin Agalarov. So here are the emails. Good morning. Emin just called and asked me to contact you with something very interesting. The Crown Prosecutor of Russia met with his father, Aras, however you pronounce that, this morning, and in their meeting offered to provide the Trump campaign with some official documents and information that would incriminate Hillary and her dealings with Russia and would be very useful to your father. This is obviously very high-level and sensitive information, but as part of Russia and its government support for Mr. Trump, helped along by Aras and Emin. What do you think is the best way to handle this information? And would you be able to speak to Emin about it directly? I can also send this info to your father via Rona, but it is ultra-sensitive, so wanted to send to you first. Best, Rob Goldstone. And Trump Jr. responds, thanks, Rob. I appreciate that. I'm on the road at the moment, but perhaps I just speak to Emin first. Seems we have some time, and if it's what you say, I love it, especially later in the summer. Could we do a call first thing next week when I am back? Best, Don. So there you go. There's the key part of it. You have this guy saying, hey, look, I got some information that's going to incriminate Hillary, and it's from high-level Russian officials, so do you want it? And Donald Trump Jr. is like, yeah, sure, let's set up a meeting. And then later on, they actually had a meeting in Trump Tower. They go on in the emails to bring that up, and it was Donald Trump Jr., Paul Manafort, Trump's former campaign advisor, if not the head of the campaign, and Jared Kushner that were in that meeting. So does that constitute collusion with a foreign government? And is that a crime? Well, look, I'm going to ask you guys. Here are the facts as we know them. And by the way, we have no clue if there actually was any real dirt on Hillary and if they were able to run with it, because there are, you know, there's reason to believe that this guy, Mr. Goldstone, who sent this email to Trump Jr., that he's kind of like a fraud. He was taking pictures of the pop star or whatever at Trump Tower and posting them on his Instagram. So just kind of like a bullshitter, it appears like. But then the argument people make is, well, that doesn't really matter because you're still attempting to collude with a government to get dirt on your opponent, and you can't do that. That's illegal. Remember the words I just spoke. Attempting to collude with a foreign government to get dirt on your opponent, you can't do that. That's illegal. That's the argument that's being made. Okay. So, pound the gavel, right? Oh, wait. What do we have here? Ukrainian efforts to sabotage Trump backfire. Kiev officials are scrambling to make amends with the president-elect after quietly working to boost Clinton. That's strange. Donald Trump wasn't the only presidential candidate whose campaign was boosted by officials of a former Soviet bloc country. Ukrainian government officials tried to help Hillary Clinton and undermine Trump by publicly questioning his fitness for office. That's not all, though. They also disseminated documents implicating a top Trump aide in corruption and suggested they were investigating the matter only to back away after the election. And they helped Clinton's allies research damaging information on Trump and his advisors, a Politico investigation found. Let me repeat that. They helped Clinton's allies research damaging information on Trump and his advisors, a Politico investigation found. What's the claim that's being made against the Trump campaign? You cannot work with, you cannot collude with a foreign government to get dirt on your opponent. That's illegal. Well, look, I'm willing to pound the gavel on the Trump campaign now for sure. I mean, those emails do show they were working with a foreign government or people who were connected to a foreign government to attempt to get dirt on their opponent. They did it. Guilty of that. But so is Hillary and her campaign. They worked with a foreign government, Ukraine, or people who were directly linked to the foreign government to try to get dirt on their opponent, Trump. So they both did that thing, and, well, obviously, the only thing that's getting any press is the Russia connection. Why? Because it's Russia. Russia, Russia, Russia. So I've been saying it from the beginning, man, this is much ado about nothing. It really is. And also, the DNC paid opposition research firm Fusion GPS to hire a British spy who then paid Russians to get the alleged pee-pee tape information. I'm going to repeat that again. So you had the DNC, Hillary's allies at the DNC, paid an opposition research firm named Fusion GPS. They in turn hired a British spy, and the British spy paid Russians to get the alleged pee-pee tape information. So by their own logic, the logic of the people saying this is collusion, this is a crime, this is horrible, Hillary's guilty of it too, her allies are guilty of it, the DNC is guilty of it, her campaign is guilty of it in regards to Ukraine. So let's stop playing this stupid fucking game. Because here's the thing, like, what do you think is going to happen? I'm serious. What do you think is going to happen? Everybody who's been, oh my God, Chris Hayes has been the most insufferable douchebag on the planet in the past 3 days. All day. Russia, 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 Russia. I go on Twitter, Russia, Russia. I go eat a sandwich and come back. He's got 8 new tweets. Russia, 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 Russia. They're like giddy little schoolgirls over this. They think it's like the most damaging thing ever. What do you think is going to happen, guys? What do you think is going to happen? You think Donald Trump Jr. is going to go to prison? Is that what you think is going to happen? That's a serious question. And then some people are saying it's treason. What he did was treason. How little do you know about the law? Treason, the legal definition of treason, means you have to be working with the government that the U.S. is currently at war with. So it's obviously not treason. We're not at war with Russia, at least not yet. And I hope we don't go to war with Russia. But, like, what do you think is going to happen? Is Donald Trump Jr. going to go to prison? Is Donald Trump going to be impeached over this? And then you get Pence? And then what's your end game? What's your end game? Then you have Pence, who's equally as shitty, if not even more shitty, doing the same draconian policies. And then what? I guess the Democrats will try to tie Pence to Russia and then try to get rid of Pence. And then you get what? Paul Ryan? I mean, come on. They're wasting so much time and energy and effort and focus on this thing that has no end game. And again, don't give me the bullshit of like, well, it doesn't matter if there's no end game. It's important for the Republic. Is it really? Well, I just told you. The thing you're mad about, allegedly, is the Trump campaign worked with a foreign government to try to get dirt on their opponent, and that's not okay. The Hillary campaign also worked with a foreign government to try to get dirt on their opponent. So are you going to be objective? Are you going to have the same standard for everybody? Or are you going to continue to be a partisan hack? That's my question. Because it appears like it's almost like the less impressive the news is on this issue, the outrage is overblown that much more. Like, the less impressive the information is, the more the Democrats are like, that's it, smoking gun, smoking gun for what? For what? Jesus Christ, man. The only thing that is apparent that for sure the Trump campaign is guilty of here is just endless lies. That's for sure. Because they, oh, but what do you mean? We never spoke to anybody ever who's Russian. What are you talking? Well, that's obvious bullshit. Okay, so don't try to pull that nonsense on us. That's clear bullshit. And then also, the most important point is, if there is some sort of high-level Kremlin plot, what has the Kremlin gotten in return? What has Trump given the Kremlin? What has the Trump campaign given the Russian government? What have they given him? I'll wait, because there is no fucking answer to that, because they haven't done anything. No tangible policy benefit for them. None. None. There's no sanctions relief. The sanctions are still in place. The Exxon deal is still dead, dead, dead. So what have they gotten? What have they gotten? Nothing. They've gotten nothing. So, yeah. When I saw this news, I knew immediately the Democrats are going to go crazy over this. They're going to start flinging feces. But it really required, it was like 5 minutes of research, 10 minutes of research to realize, wait, hold on. The Democrats are mad because the Trump campaign tried to get dirt on Hillary from a foreign government. And they say that's illegal collusion and you can't do that. But then you find out, oh, the Hillary campaign tried to get dirt on Trump from a foreign government. That's the same crime you say Trump is guilty of. So either they're both guilty of it, and you think both of those things should be illegal, and they both should go to jail or whatever, or, you know, it's much ado about nothing, and it's actually not illegal to get dirt on your opponent from a foreign government. And then also, let's be serious here. This is the part that, like, nobody's bringing up. Whatever happened to evaluating whether or not that information is information the public should know? You know what I mean? Like, that's my benchmark. When Edward Snowden released the information he released, only idiots, like, immediately were mad because they were like, oh, it's illegal. What he did is illegal. It's a crime. It's bad. Well, no, why don't you look at the content of what he released to determine whether or not the public should know this? And the answer was, of course, we should know it. Same with Chelsea Manning and what she released. Oh, look, we learned that our government is massacring journalists and civilians. Seems like we should know that. Oh, she broke a law by, you know, releasing that information, but she should have done that. So by the same token, let's say Hillary got information on Trump from a foreign government, but it's shit we should know about Trump, like, say, like an offshore bank account or something. Well, then, yeah, I want to fucking know that. I want to know that. I don't give a fuck who she got it from. That's information we should know. But the opposite's also true. If Trump somehow digs up dirt on Hillary from wherever, but it's something we should know, well, then I'm going to fucking defend the fact that we got that information because we should know it. Everybody's just shutting off their mind in regards to this Russia issue. I mean, it's really embarrassing and sad to watch people who I had some degree of respect for just go down the rabbit hole. And there's it. They're being so silly. Everybody's being so silly. So, yeah. There you have it. We now know they indeed did try to get dirt on Hillary from people with connects to a foreign government, but so did Hillary. And I'm willing to guess that's very common. You know, that's probably super common. I can't even imagine how many campaigns somebody with a connection to the UK government or the Israeli government or whatever government whispered in one of the candidates' ears, hey, just so you know, blah, blah, blah. I just don't, I can't bring myself to flip out about it because I don't think it's that big a deal. Okay. And then, of course, sorry, I got one more thing. I gotta talk about it real quick. And this is distracting from everything else. You know, that's the point I find myself always coming back to, is that as you waste all of your energy on this, like, they think this is having such a big impact in middle America. But from the people who've actually done town halls in the middle of America, they go, oh, yeah, this is having zero effect to help the Democrats. None. None. What people are like, I don't wake up thinking about fucking Vladimir Putin. Come on. I got to feed my kids. I got to keep this light bill on. I got to pay the water bill. I got to do all these things. And you're just running around talking about Vladimir Putin. How many ways can Trump just destroy this country? He passed a bill that has a 6% approval rating that guts our internet privacy rights. Trump's FCC right now is trying to gut net neutrality. I mean, he signed a rule that allows coal companies to pollute the waterways. He signed an executive order that says for every one new regulation we put on the books, we have to get rid of two regulations. Just stupid, stupid, stupid shit. I mean, escalating in Syria, escalating in Afghanistan, escalating in Iraq. The list goes on and on. His first act as president was to get rid of a tax cut for the middle class, so to raise taxes on the middle class for first-time homebuyers. He gives you every opportunity. His health care bill is the most disastrous bill I've ever seen in my life. It guts Medicaid $800 billion. It's a giant tax cut to the rich. It gets rid of protections for pre-existing conditions and makes it optional state by state. It would kick at least 28 million people off of their health insurance. The Democrats have ammunition forever to bludgeon this horrific administration over the head, and they're using none of it. And they're getting wrapped up in hysteria and delusion, and it's just pathetic to watch. Okay. Next. Morning Consult has their new annual poll out on the most and least liked senators in America. And the results are predictable, and you could guess them right now. But let's take a look. Senator Hirono of Hawaii is number 3 most liked. Well, that one you wouldn't be able to guess. With a 67% approval rating, Senator Schatz, with the world's most awkward name, has a 69% approval rating. Wow. The most awkward named senator has the most awkward number for approval ratings. And, of course, Bernie Sanders has a 75% approval rating. 75%! That's amazing. So let's go to the least liked. We have Jeff Flake, John McCain, and Mitch McConnell are the least liked. McConnell has a 48% disapproval, 41% approval. So if I'm not mistaken, I think the methodology on this one was going to the constituents in their own states and asking them. And, yeah, you could see that. Isn't that hilarious that the worst three are Republicans, and then the best three are, two of them are Democrats, one of them is an independent who caucuses with the Democrats. Yeah. The John McCain, how's that Maverick thing going? I think people looking at McCain and how he's just seemingly out of it all the time now. Like, he sits in these committee hearings, he's like, where's my porridge? I miss the good old days. Bring back Gilligan's Island. Where's my phone? I want to play poker. He just seems so out of touch. And just so, like, he's a maverick right now in all the wrong ways. You know, like, oh, I'm mad that Trump isn't more warlike. Oh, John, you're so brave. So brave. So him and Lindsey Graham are prodding the administration to be even more neocon-esque. And turns out people don't like endless war. Who'd have figured? Mitch McConnell is just the world's biggest sellout. It probably was John Boehner back in the day when Boehner was in the House, but Mitch McConnell is, I mean, he just has a track record of whatever you want, corporate America, I will do. So he's the least liked. And naturally, everybody knows why Bernie Sanders is the most liked. He's actually four things that people agree with, that crazy notion. So here's a guy who's always pushing for a living wage, always pushing for a new deal, always fighting for Medicare for all and free college and wanting to tax the rich and regulate Wall Street. And people hear that. And that's the thing is, we're led to believe by corporate media that that's, although it's all left wing, just left wing priorities is what that is. Actually, no, those priorities are also happen to be in the center of America. Like the polls show, those ideas are incredibly popular, even among Republicans. Did you know 58% of Republicans want to raise the minimum wage? So there are a lot of ideas that we're led to believe. It's like, you know, oh, there's a rigid divide between Democrats and Republicans. Only in Washington. Only in Washington. In the rest of the country, Democrats and Republicans agree on a lot of stuff. And Bernie Sanders is proof of that, that here's a guy who calls himself a Democratic Socialist, pushes for these kinds of policies, and even Republicans are like, yeah, I like this guy. Sorry, I don't know what to tell you. I just like him. So unsurprising, for as long as Bernie Sanders remains a senator, Bernie Sanders will be the most liked politician. And Mitch McConnell will always be down there by the bottom because they represent just two totally different things. One of them is somebody with integrity who cares a lot about the people and getting policies that would help regular people. The other one is the biggest disconnected corporatist and sellout on the planet. Okay. Do. Let me do. Do I have? I want to do one more, but a lot of these are in like long things, long segments. Okay, actually, you know what? Here, I'll squeeze in this one about Trump and Twitter. Some Twitter users are suing President Trump for a really interesting reason. Take a look at this. A group of Twitter users, blocked by President Trump, has filed a lawsuit against him, claiming the president blocking users on the social network is unconstitutional. On Tuesday, seven individual defendants and the Knight First Amendment Institute at Columbia University filed suit against Trump, Press Secretary Sean Spicer, and Dan Scavino, the White House Director of Social Media. The suit argues that Twitter is a public forum under the First Amendment, and because the president's Twitter is used for official government announcements, the tweets should be accessible to everyone. The suit asked the president to unblock the users. Okay, so it's easy to read this case and kind of scoff at it and go like, yeah, whatever. And that was my initial response. Like, okay, really? This is what you're going to fucking take your time to do and think about? But then when you reflect on it, you go, oh, wait. Yeah, like he's president of the United States and he does often talk about policy and things that are directly related to Americans' lives on Twitter. So the fucking nerve of this guy to, yeah, I'm just going to block you because I don't like what you said to me. No, it's not like that. You're not like a regular person. You're the president of the United States. So I kind of agree with them. Like, yeah, you shouldn't be able to block him. Now, he's well within his rights to mute them. So in other words, muting is they could tweet at him all day long and none of their tweets come up in his feed. He doesn't see that they're tweeting him whatever, you know, negative attacks on him that they're doing. But yeah, they should have a right to see everything he's saying, especially when it's policy related, which oftentimes it is. Everybody knows Trump goes on these tweet storms early in the morning. Like, I don't know, he'll rant against North Korea. He'll rant, oh, the Democrats are doing this, and I don't like it. So, yeah, I kind of agree with the people bringing the suit. And in fact, when you think about it, I actually think it's kind of an open and shut case. Now, I already know what I think the defense is that they're going to make. What they're going to say is, whoa. No, that's his personal Twitter account. And he's got the POTUS Twitter account, which is the one that where they talk about official business. So, no, he's allowed to block him on his personal account. But here's the problem with that. He actually does do, like, policy-related tweets on his personal Twitter account. So you can't, again, you can't just, like, sweep that under the rug. And, well, whatever, he's president, but you don't have a right to see what he's talking about when it comes to policy. Actually, yes, you do. You 100% do. So, yeah, I hope they win. And I hope that everybody who's blocked by Trump has to get unblocked. And, you know, no problem with him moving them to muting them. But blocking? Nah, man. But this shows, like, he doesn't think about this shit. He doesn't care. He's an impulsive child. Like, if I was president, that would be one of the things I actually thought about. Like, hold on. Yeah, I can't really, like, block people. By the way, I don't block people now. I'll mute the fuck out of you, but I don't block you. But, like, yeah, I would think, I can't. Like, I'm talking about things related to governing the fucking country. I can't just say, this person said something mean to me, so now you're excluded from this medium of communication that I use all the time. So he doesn't think about this stuff. He doesn't care because he's not a politically minded person per se. He's just a – did I just say per se? That's hilarious. He's just a moron. He's just not that bright, and this is another example of it here. Okay. Let's take a break. When we come back, I want to give everybody an update on the situation in Libya, and then we'll get into Joe Scarborough and – Joe Manchin on TYT, lot to talk about. Stay right there.
Try to change, but always out fucking around in the club. Every day the diamonds on you get bigger and bigger. Hustle from my heart so every night I can deliver. Saying sorry, laying up a way up in your liver. Red bottoms got you walking funny. Get you a agent, she ballin' and all she talk is money. Take a shopping, baby boy, ain't no salary cap. She get it poppin', so you better bring battery pack. Perfect time to relax. Nothing is perfect other than being a perfect match. They all watch me cause the moves I make out of their budget. Diamond district, six figures on my shorty nugget.
I try to change, but always around.
With some rather serious foreign policy stuff. Libya. Okay. Cue up my little video clip here for you. Okay. I want to give everybody an update on the current situation in Libya. Let's watch a short CNN clip. Oops.
Terrorist militias emerged in Libya, all fighting for power. Following the Libyan revolution and the overthrow of Muammar Gaddafi in 2011, terrorist militias emerged in Libya, all fighting for power, fighting for influence in this oil-rich country. The political infighting, the chaos, no real government in charge, and with porous borders and this large country awash in weapons, all created that perfect environment for jihadist groups, some of them with links that go back decades to Libya, to thrive in the country, especially in the east in cities like Benghazi and Derna, and also in the south of Libya. Militant training camps were also set up in different parts of the country, and fighters traveled from there to Syria. In late 2014, early 2015, ISIS's Libyan affiliate claimed responsibility for some high-profile attacks, released gruesome videos of beheadings. Like Mosul in Iraq and like Raqqa in Syria, ISIS captured one of Libya's main cities, Sirte, and it ruled it ruthlessly until December of 2016, when Libyan forces backed by U.S. air power recaptured that city. But the end of ISIS in Sirte does not mean an end to ISIS in Libya. The country remains lawless. It remains divided. Different governments, different parliaments, backed by various militias, all claiming legitimacy, all still fighting for power. The same circumstances that led to the rise of ISIS in Libya in the first place.
Wow. Okay, so Libya is not doing too well. The country is very fractionalized, and you have ISIS still has a stronghold in certain parts of Libya, and you have rival militia groups going at it. You have no stability and no security. And remember, the U.S. was directly involved in toppling Gaddafi. And now we know the facts and what's going on there right now and how much of a mess it is, and we learned this week. U.S. military considers ramping up Libya presence. It's almost like a sad joke at this point. Like, you name a region of the world that is in crisis and doing very poorly, and by the way, these are places that have had U.S. military intervention. So, like, you know, we were part of the problem, but you name a region in trouble, and then the U.S. is like, anyway, let's increase troop levels. They have a stock answer for absolutely everything. Yeah, increase troop level. Just think, you know what I think this needs? More troops. That's the answer for everything. Syria, more troops. Afghanistan, more troops. Iraq, I think more troops. Like, they don't even try to hide the imperialism anymore. It's just like, yeah, that's what we do. We're building bases everywhere. There's a shadow war going on in Africa right now. We spend $100 billion a year on 800 military bases. At any given moment, there's 100 U.S. special ops missions going on around the world. We spend more than half of our discretionary budget on military spending. Every time you see a story about the places where we are doing interventions, it's because we're escalating. Remember that story about how in Somalia where they're lessening the rules of engagement? They're weakening the rules of engagement? I mean, think about how crazy that is. Oh, my God. Yeah, you know, we don't like the idea of, like, going to a place and only fighting if somebody fights with us first. We're just going to get rid of the rules of engagement and we'll just start fighting with random people. Because, you know, we have such a great track record of getting the right targets. It's not like Chelsea Manning released information that showed that our military people kill journalists and kill civilians and then laugh about it. Oh, that's exactly what she showed. This is what our money's going to. If you're a U.S. taxpayer, this is where your money's going. Meanwhile, our infrastructure is crumbling. It gets a grade of D+. Flint, Michigan doesn't have clean water. You know, your fellow countrymen, half of them make $30,000 a year or less. Stagnant wages in the middle class. I mean, it's just a sad, sad joke. The government is so unresponsive to the people. And by the way, whatever happened to only Congress can declare war? That's in the Constitution. You wouldn't know it by how the government acts, but that's in the Constitution. Congress has to do a declaration of war. So where is it? These open-ended conflicts everywhere, and nobody bats an eyelash. By the way, thank you, Obama, for setting that precedent of, yeah, we're just going to do more intervention and tack it on to the authorization for the use of military force under George W. Bush in the War on Terror. So they just add everything to an early 2000s resolution. They go, yeah, Libya, I don't know, close enough. Yemen, I don't know, close enough. Because they say it's a war on terror, so anybody they deem a terrorist in any country, they say we have the right to militarily go in there. No, it used to be the case you had to name a specific country you're going to war with. Now they go, country's irrelevant, you're just a terrorist. I'm going to label you a terrorist and we will attack anywhere and everywhere. And now you have a guy like Trump. See, people trusted Obama's judgment more. Like, oh, you know, okay, whatever. He's doing these things that are unconstitutional, but hey, at least he seems like a bright guy, so we can kind of trust him. Trump gets in there, and now you see the problem with setting this precedent, is now they just anywhere and everywhere. I don't know. I want to attack there. Here, let me spin around in a circle and point on a map, and then you attack. I mean, think about, I haven't seen a poll on this, but think about what the poll would be if you asked the American people, hey, should we ramp up war in Libya? Man, it would be like 8% of Americans say yes. Even diehard Trump people would be like, no, man, what are you talking? Libya? I don't even know what that means. So, sad is the only thing I have to say about this. All right, let's move on to Joe Scarborough and Mika Brzezinski. I really can't stand these two. Where are you at? Okay. Joe Scarborough and Mika Brzezinski went on Stephen Colbert's show since they've been attacked relentlessly by Trump recently. And Scarborough made what's being viewed as a big announcement. Let's watch.
You've changed your attitude about Donald Trump. Why haven't other Republicans done the same? Because you're a Republican congressman. What do you think is happening with your own party?
Well, I think it's inexplicable. But this is well before Donald Trump was elected president that my party has betrayed their core values. I remember back in December of 2015 when Donald Trump supported a Muslim ban. I said on the air, it's very simple. It's black and white. I said I could never vote for anybody in my party that would say they were going to ban people because of the God they worshipped. You look at...
With these revelations now.
But the problem is, though, it was disturbing through the entire campaign. In February, when he talked about David Duke and pretended that he didn't know who David Duke was and didn't know what the Ku Klux Klan did, you didn't have Republicans coming out saying, I can never support Donald Trump because he's racist. They'd have 1,000 other excuses why. But they always overlook that. Judge Curiel, when he called a guy from Indiana, he attacked him, said he can never be fair because he's Hispanic. Republicans didn't come out and say, I can never vote for Donald Trump because he's a racist. Time and time and time again, they turned the other way. And they're doing the same thing now. And it's actually disgusting. And you have to ask yourself, what exactly is the Republican Party willing to do? How far are they willing to go? How much of this country and our values are they willing to sell out?
But aren't you a Republican?
I am a Republican, but I'm not going to be a Republican anymore. I've got to become an independent.
So virtually every media outlet that, you know, I go to that where I do my research for the show had an article about this. There's a lot of praise for him on Twitter. Yeah, you know, that's good. Good you're not going to be a Republican anymore and you're going to be an independent. Step in the right direction, I guess you could say. But I think what annoyed me about this is the part where he's, like, almost lecturing other Republicans, like, you know, hey, during the campaign it was horrible. What are you talking about? I mean, with the Muslim ban and the racist stuff he said about the Mexican judge who can't be objective and... He's pointing that out as like, wasn't it obvious? You should, like, all of you should have been condemning it then. But, like, that exact same argument is what's wrong with you, Joe, because you had no problem being a Republican when George W. Bush waged an illegal war in Iraq, killed a minimum 200,000 civilians, put the wars on... the credit card, by the way, ran up the debt, ran up the deficit, did Gitmo, did torture, there was a torture scandal, passed the Patriot Act, which gutted our constitutional rights. The Bush tax cuts, again, blew a giant hole in the deficit, gave tremendous amounts of money to the rich and screwed over regular people, shifted the tax burden on them, did Wall Street deregulation, which led to the subprime mortgage crisis and the Great Recession, though to be fair, that wasn't just W. Bush, that was also Bill Clinton. Graham Leach Bliley was under Bill Clinton, which repealed Glass-Steagall. Like, back then, you didn't go, oh, wow, ripping up Magna Carta and the Constitution, doing torture, doing war crimes, killing innocent people, invading a country that didn't attack us, occupying that country, wasting all this tax money, waging a war on the middle class. Back then, Joe Scarborough wasn't like, oh, man, this is terrible. It had, when Trump came along and said some mean things, then he was like, ah, that's so impolite. I have to leave the Republican Party. But, it, you know, it's the old saying. I didn't come up with it. Other people have said it before me, but, you know, Trump wants to ban Muslims and George W. Bush bombed Muslims. You know, well, and Obama did too, to be fair. And Hillary Clinton did too, to be fair. But, like, you didn't see all the problems that were there in your party back then? it's just so convenient that, like, oh, now that you're being attacked by President Trump and you're getting more recognition than you've ever gotten before over this, now all of a sudden is where the fake moral grandstanding comes in. Oh, yes, I'm a man of good character. I am totally and completely and utterly against evil things like a Muslim ban. Like, that bar is so low for the corporate media and for establishment Democrats to go, oh, yes, you're so brave. You're so brave. You sat there and cheered it on as we invaded a country that didn't attack us and killed civilians and tortured people and had an extrajudicial prison and destroyed the economy, and you didn't say anything, and you actually were in favor of it. But now you're so brave because you're against Trump. So the bar now for good person has been lowered so much that it's just at anything but Trump, anybody but Trump. And if you don't believe me, go look at the reaction nowadays to people like David Frum, Bill Kristol, Evan McMuffin. These are loathsome people with horrible ideas, with terrible far-right conservatives, neocons. But since they say mean things about Trump, you know, the establishment press and corporate Democrats, he said something anti-Trump. Please, just walk and chew gum at the same time. You could say, hey, man, good. Good for you, leaving the Republican Party now. But let's be serious. Why the fuck didn't you leave back under George W. Bush? Why didn't you leave under Ronald Reagan? It's not like, you know, you go back pre-W. Bush and all of a sudden the Republicans are, like, lovely. They've never been. They've never been. So low fucking bar. Low bar. Okay. All right, let's talk about, or let's do a segment here on Joe Manchin. Senator Joe Manchin of West Virginia, the Joe Manchin, sat down for an interview with Cenk Uygur of TYT, and Joe really put on a clinic in bullshitting.
Well, you voted to repeal the stream protection rule. And your top donor is First Energy that wound up getting in some degree of trouble for putting arsenic in a pond. It seems like they would benefit from the repeal of that regulation. So did that have anything to do with your vote?
No. Jenks, I know it's hard to believe, and I know it's hard for people to – I don't have any idea who gives me money. I don't solicit from the standpoint that you do this for me, quid pro quo. That's never been me. That's not my political mantra at all. With that being said, the stream protection rule, I couldn't even get a definition on what they consider a stream. Should a stream have water in it? Should it have aquatic life? Should it be disposing into our water, our streams, if you can, or our rivers or – water sources, the overreach that they had on some of this stuff made no sense at all. And I couldn't go home and explain it. And I've always said this, Jenks, if I can't go home in West Virginia and explain it, I sure as heck can't vote for it. And some of this does not make sense. I have said this. I think there's a balance between the environment and economy. We have a responsibility. If there's a certain criteria that we're trying to meet, then we should have the technology that we have developed showing that that can be done. If you can't show that it can be done, then how can you hold me at a criteria when we haven't invested ourselves as a government and have no intentions of doing so? Just because you like something or don't like something doesn't make sense.
So, Senator Manchin, I got a note from one of your constituents, Lisa Lucas, and she talked about how her family catches bass in the streams in West Virginia. The problem is literally every single stream in West Virginia has a fish consumption advisory. And so she's asking, look, did they use this to feed their family? If I can't fish in any of the streams because the fish might be poisoned, don't you think you should make more of an effort to make sure that the streams in West Virginia are clean?
I will, and I agree with her. It should be more of an effort. And
well,
I think some of the streams we have is cleaned up quite a bit, James. I fish in the streams as much as I possibly can. I keep my fishing pole in my car because when I go over the mountains and I fish all through the mountains of West Virginia, I'm fishing for trout, bass, everything I possibly can.
Joe, what are you doing? I mean, at the end there, he really just pivoted and just poured on the classic politician bullshit speak. Well, you know, talking about fishing, I got a fishing pole in my car. I love going fishing. I go fishing all the time. I go to all them streams in West Virginia, every single one. You were asked a specific direct question about the pollution in the streams, how people can't eat it because of arsenic in the water and all these problems. I love fishing was your answer. I got a fish pole in my car. Okay, so look at how much he was bullshitting us there. Faced with the fact that he was fine with getting rid of the stream protection rule, he's like, stream? What's a stream even? I don't even know what a stream is. That's what his argument is. I couldn't even get a definition on a stream. So, okay, Joe, let me get this straight. That matters? Like, it's okay to pollute some of the water that people fish in, and other ones, no. It's okay to pollute some of the water that's drinking water, and others, no. No, how about it's not okay to pollute any of the drinking water, any of the stream water, any of... Like, this idea of, like, well, what do you mean? They wouldn't even tell me what a stream is. As if under any circumstance it's okay to just fucking dump arsenic and pollution into water that is directly near people and affects people and their life. Oh, my God, that's such a bad answer. It's like Bill Clinton. It depends on what the definition of is. It's a stream. What's a stream? Stream, I stream, you stream, we all stream for ice cream. Stream. Streams are irrelevant. Streams are a figment of your imagination, something. And then, look, let's be clear, and Jen goes on to bring this up. The dude takes a lot of money from all these different energy companies. That's why he lets them get away with shit like this. That's why he votes like he does. He's doing their bidding. They don't want those rules in place, so he'd rather represent them than regular people of West Virginia, because they are giving him his checks. Now, we have the answer, though, thank goodness. Paula Jean Swearingen, Justice Democrat, running against Joe Manchin, primarying Joe Manchin, and is here to fix all this. You know what she's doing? She's taking no corporate money and no PAC money. So she's only raising in small dollar donations from you, from regular people. So she's only going to represent regular people. Go read our platform, justicedemocrats.com/platform. That's what she stands for. And I've never seen somebody more committed in my life to fighting for the right things for the people of West Virginia. She's born and raised in West Virginia. She's the epitome of West Virginia, lives it. It's in her soul. And she really cares about this stuff, and she's fighting for all the right things, and she's fighting back against corporate Joe Manchin. But here's a stunning fact, which really shows you how far gone Joe Manchin is on this stuff. He is against the EPA having the ability to regulate greenhouse gases. What? So, in other words, he says the Environmental Protection Agency shouldn't be in the business of environmental protection. That's like not even debatable. It's like saying the DMV shouldn't be involved in, motor vehicle-related issues. But then what's the point of it? The EPA shouldn't be involved in regulating greenhouse gases. So the EPA protecting the environment, I don't want to have that. Because, again, his donors pay him to be on that page. Later on in this interview, he goes on to say, donors? I don't know any of my donors. I don't know what you're talking about. Quid pro quo. That's the dodge, man. That's always the dodge. There's no quid pro quo. So, in other words, he's not literally directly in a room with energy CEOs who say, here is the money. Now you must vote this way on this legislation for us. He's like, that's not happening. There's no quid pro quo. There doesn't have to be. When you're at this high of a level, it's implied. It's, hey, here, do you see the money that I'm giving to your PAC? It is a lot of money. So you know what field I'm in, right? Oh, I'm Wall Street. I'm in the finance industry. So make sure you vote to deregulate. You know, it's all implied. They're not dumb. They understand. Oh, you're from that industry, and I know what issues would affect you in a certain way, and they know how to vote as a result of that. And his record proves it. His record proves it. That's what you need to see, how he votes. He wants to pull the wool over your eyes and make it. No, totally. I'm kind of progressive somewhat, depending on what room I'm in. If I'm around conservatives, I'm not progressive at all. But now I'm talking to you, Cenk Uygur, and the TYT audience. Oh, no, I'm totally progressive. It's just pathetic. How can we sit by while this guy, he's an Uncle Tom Democrat. That's the only way to describe him. And he's going to prove it over and over. I mean, when you vote to get rid of protection for clean water, when West Virginia is struggling with dirty water, that really shows people where your allegiance lies. Okay. Now, should we power through? I think I'm going to blow off the last break. Or I'll just hold off a little bit. Okay, let me do at least one more story and then we'll take the final break. Or we might just blow it off completely. We're still on Joe Manchin. I got two more Joe Manchin stories because it's that important. I have to break down his nonsense for you. Let's go to Medicare for All. Joe Manchin was asked directly by Cenk Uygur if he supports Medicare for All. Watch him morph into Neo from The Matrix and dodge.
What's your position on Medicare for All?
Medicare for All, or the one-payer system I think we're talking about, I think it should be debated. I think that we should have, there should be a working group looking at all aspects of that. If we're trying to make the public believe that we can have a market-driven system in healthcare that we do today, right, wrong, or indifferent, it's market-driven, that you're going to get the same services through a one-payer system, or you're going to pay the same taxes that you're paying now, whatever you're paying is going to be the same. I think that's not correct and not accurate and not an honest attempt at telling the people what it's going to take in order for us to go that direction. But I think it's something we should be looking at. You know, when you become 65, they don't ask you about your pre-existing condition. They don't ask you what concerns and problems you may have. They're going to take care of you. So I understand where that comes from. I want to make sure we look at every aspect of it. So before the Republicans just want to throw everybody out, can't we sit down and help work with people? How can you give $600 billion of tax rebates to the wealthiest people in America and then take it away from $800 billion of service to the poorest people? That's a non-starter. So
yeah. So the Republican proposals are draconian, and I think almost everybody, certainly on the Democratic side, agrees, including yourself, that that's not the right way to go. Last question on Medicare for All. You've got 60% of the country that now says they're in favor of it. That is a big, big percentage. Obviously, Medicare, as it is applied, has a popularity rating of 77%. Even 53% say yes, government-run, single-payer health care. So with those huge numbers behind you, you said you're open to it, but a lot of senators have now come out and declared, yes, we are for Medicare for All.
Well,
are you there yet?
That they're going to pay difference in taxes, too. The tax system, if you look at the countries that have one-payer system, everybody pays something. Everybody's paying into it. And also, you're going to be, your access to health care is going to be a little bit more controlled. That's how they control the prices. I'm supporting U.S. negotiating. Hell, don't you think, Cenk, that the U.S. government should negotiate for lower prices, whether it's pharmaceuticals or anything? They should be in there. How do we allow Medicare not to negotiate? Doesn't make any sense to me at all.
Right.
But
so you're saying that there are going to be higher taxes for Medicare for All, which is true, but then you would have no premiums, no deductibles, no co-pays, et cetera. So are you in favor of it or no?
We have this young boy, okay, this young child. I just was thinking of England right now in London, UK. This one child, right? They're deciding now whether that child gets services or not. I don't think that would be a decision we'd make in America.
So you're not for Medicare for All? I'm just trying to understand.
I'm looking at it. I want to do whatever is best, but I don't want to go in with blinders on to say, oh, yeah, no problem at all. I'm to the point, sit down, let's look at the pluses and the minuses, make sure the public sees it transparent and makes decisions.
Okay.
Right now,
mm-hmm.
you know, we have facts aren't on the table. I can't tell you, will it be an open market? Will I still be market-driven? Do I still have access to the best care in the world?
Right.
I'm hearing that a lot of the Canadians come to America because they can't get it when they want it and what they want.
Yeah.
That clip was very instructive and illuminating and tells you everything you need to know about Joe Manchin. Because he starts out trying to hold back how right-wing he is, and by the end it all comes out. So at the beginning, what's his answer? Do you support Medicare for All? It should be debated. Joe, what does that mean? He's asking you your opinion on it. He's asking you what you think we should do. Debate is good. No, what side of that debate are you on? I think it should be debated. Who do you think you're fooling, son? Who do you think you're fooling? We can't look at that and go, oh, that's a dodge. That's the clearest dodge ever. And then there's just a lot of bullshit, like, well, you know, people have to know what's going to go on with their taxes and stuff. People will save money with Medicare for All. Let me repeat. People will save money with Medicare for All. Like Cenk said, there's no premiums, no deductibles, no copays. So you save with all of that. But also there's no profit margin. So there's no unnecessary middleman skimming off the top, because they have to make sure to pay executives millions of dollars so they can have their yachts and their home in the Hamptons. And again, this isn't an open question. It's not like, well, we don't know. Is it the case that you'd save money with Medicare for All? No, it's a fact. Every other single-payer country, they pay less and they cover everybody. And they have better health outcomes. So again, I'll get to more on that in a second. He says, well, you know, access to health care is going to be limited. Access to health care is already limited. In other countries, they ration care based on need. Who needs it? Okay, you're going to get it. Oh, you have an elective procedure? You might have to wait a little bit because it's elective. It's elective. You're choosing to have it. You don't really need it, so you're going to wait a little bit for that. But if you need it, you're going to get it immediately. Here in the U.S., we ration care based on the size of your wallet. That's how we do it here. They do a wallet biopsy, as a doctor said in an article I read about this a while ago. That's what they do here. So this idea of, like, what do you mean? We live in, like, and he said, oh, best healthcare system in the world. Again, right-wing talking point, nowhere near true. We're ranked number 37. And that's according to a World Health Organization study, admittedly out of date. It's from the year 2000. But there's been studies since then, I think one in 2014 by the Commonwealth Fund or somebody like that. And it was, we were last among modern nations. All the other modern nations have one version or another of a single-payer system. We were last. So it's not the best care in the world. It's the best care in the world just for, like, Saudi princes. So if you're incredibly rich, yes, you come here, you get the best care. But everybody else, middle class, upper middle class, poor, they're not getting that same level of care. And then he said, well, the problem is the facts aren't on the table. No, the facts are on the table. You haven't looked at them. And you haven't looked at them. There's a reason why you haven't looked at them, because you have taken $441,248 from health PACs. That probably includes insurance, health care companies, and big pharma. $441,248. Well, the facts aren't on the table. No, they're there. You're paid not to look at them. Because when you see the facts, you go, oh, that's open and shut case. It's not an open question. We know single-payer systems are better. Under our system, people get screwed. Again, he told me, oh, there was a kid in the UK and something was happening. We have 45,000 people that die every year in the U.S. because they don't have access to basic care. That number is zero in all the other industrialized nations. So all this bull, there's a point when Ted Cruz and Bernie Sanders were debating health care, which they did on CNN a while ago. This is a point that's such bullshit. What the people on the right do is they'll anecdotally pick cases and go, see, here's somebody who didn't get the best care. and there was a bad outcome. Okay, we have 45,000 deaths because they don't have basic care, because we don't have a single-payer system. Deaths! So you've been saying, oh my God, this person's surgery was late and it was trouble and this and that. All you need to do is learn the name of like one or two or three people who died in this country because they didn't have access to basic health care, and that whole argument on the right is totally obliterated. He couldn't help himself, man. Joe Manchin, he knows it's a progressive audience. He knows he's talking to a progressive host. He knows that Medicare for All is our top priority, one of our top priorities. He knows his primary opponent, Paula Swearingen, is a lion roaring, talking about Medicare for All is what we're fighting for. I'm not compromising. That's what we're going to fight for. It's a 60% favorability rating. He knows all this stuff. He still couldn't bring himself to be like, yeah, I support it. Yeah, it should be debated, and when I say debated, I mean I'm going to bring up all these bullshit right-wing talking points about how, you know, they restrict care and it's going to raise your taxes and blah, 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 blah. Don't you want to vote for me, Democrats? Don't you want to vote for me, progressives? Aren't I so great? Dude, he voted for three of Trump's 16 cabinet picks. He voted for fucking Mike Pompeo to lead the CIA when Pompeo argued Snowden should be executed. He approved a guy to be in the CIA who wants to execute Edward Snowden. He's okay with Rex Tillerson, the CEO of ExxonMobil, being Secretary of State when Donald Trump said on the campaign trail, we're going to take the oil from Iraq. He's okay with Jeff Sessions as Attorney General. Mister, you're not a good person if you smoke weed. What are you talking about? Yeah, we need to double down on the war on drugs. And he wants you to vote for him. He thinks that, like, oh, man, I got this locked up. Step aside, Joe. JusticeDemocrats.com/donate. JusticeDemocrats.com/donate. Go do it, man. Paula Swearingen. A lot of that money will go to Paula Swearingen, who's running against Joe Manchin. We got to get her in there. I mean, who are we kidding? This is a no-brainer. We got to go full court press to get Paula Swearingen in there. And I think, I don't know how many more days we have left. It's not many, but we have maybe a few more days left in the Secular Talk shirt drive where half the proceeds of that go to Justice Democrats. So that's booster.com/secular talk shirts if you want to donate that way and get a shirt in the process. Okay. All right. Let's take a break and when we come back, I got one more on Joe Manchin and then we'll get into Joan Walsh and Bernie Sanders. Stay right there. We will be right back.
I want you to find me. I won't get myself. I want you. say, we slap you with the left, the left. You will fake, so I'm gon' grab you with the left, the left. I feel like I'm the left, real nigga, left, the left. It's like I'm on an island by myself, the left. Please don't make me slap you with the left, the left. You will fake, so I'm gon' grab you with the left, the left. I feel like I'm the left, real nigga, left, the left. It's like I'm
son of a bitch. All right, we're back. One more on Joe Manchin, and then we'll move on. I got two more for you. Okay, here we go. Joe Manchin was asked why he supported arming Saudi Arabia. Wow, seems pretty indefensible. And his answer's colossally sad.
You voted, you were among the five Democrats who voted for arming Saudi Arabia. Now, I know that we've been doing that for a long time, but Saudi Arabia has the same fundamentalist Muslim ideology as some of the biggest terror groups out there. That's a reality. And not only were 15 out of the 19 hijackers Saudis, and you could say that's a long time ago, but they helped fund the Sunni insurgency against our boys in Iraq. So why did you vote to fund the Saudi arms deal?
Well, I asked a lot of questions on that. When I was on armed services for 6 years, I was concerned about absolutely, because the so-called smart bombs weren't being used very smartly, and there was still collateral damage. We were all concerned about that. But I was told by every expert that we have that advises us that these weapons are going to be sold by the French or UK or people who might not put as much of an emphasis on the education, the training that needs to be done with these types of weapons to reduce the collateral damage. So I looked at it from the standpoint, do we have more input? Can we use more input as far as on education and training to make sure these weapons that we're providing are used in the in the best manner that we can to defeat the terrorists and defeat the people that we're trying to defeat the enemy without the innocent being harmed? And I was told at the end that would be the thing to do.
So, yeah, Frank and Steve and them were like, man, you should vote for it. And I was like, experts. They're experts. What am I going to do? So I voted for it. Okay, that is such a bad answer in so many ways. He said he was told by every expert that it's a good idea to do it. Which experts? Who? People who are currently in the military? Because we know there's a track record of people in the military. To them, hey, when all you have is a hammer, everything looks like a nail. Sell more weapons, do more war. That's their philosophy. If you don't believe me, look at modern American history. Go back to Vietnam. No matter what the facts were on the ground, they would tell Lyndon Johnson, we need more troops. Really, we've been there for a long time, and it doesn't seem to get better. We need more troops. So, yeah, look, the answer is just more troops. There's always it's not enough troops. We need more troops. More weapons, more troops. Their answer is always the same. So what experts are you talking about? Now, if you're not talking about those experts, are you talking about people who are paid by the defense industry? Who, wow, shocker, they're in favor of something that would boost their profits. Are those the experts you're talking about? And by the way, a lot of these people go on TV, and they mask themselves as former lieutenant in the military and blah, blah, blah. Yeah, and then they don't tell you they're on the payroll today of Raytheon or Boeing. He's either super naive and gullible, or he's just so corrupt and he's lying to you. That those are the only options. And then, oh my God, look at that fucking answer. You know, I was told that if we don't sell the weapons to Saudi Arabia, France might do it or the UK might do it. And they aren't as concerned about civilian deaths, so we needed to beat them in selling weapons to the terror state. Okay, think about that argument. Just remove Saudi Arabia, put in ISIS. You know, look, I was told by the experts we need to sell the arms to ISIS because, you know, if the UK does or France does, we wouldn't care as much about civilian casualties. But when we give them the weapons, we train them and stuff with civilian casualties. That's just absurd on its face, right? Well, yeah, it's absurd on its face for Saudi Arabia, too, because they are on purpose massacring civilians in Yemen. On purpose. They're bombing mosques. They're bombing open-air markets. They're bombing hospitals. They're bombing schools. There was even a case of them bombing a school for the blind. They're using cluster bombs, which are illegal under international law because they blow up well after if a civilian happens to stumble across one. So, and they're using white phosphorus. Again, chemical weapons, illegal under international law. They don't give a fuck. So they're killing civilians on purpose. But even if you're naive and gullible and you say, no, Kyle, come on now, they don't want, they're not trying to do that. How do they treat their own citizens? You're going to arm a country that declares all atheists are terrorists? You're going to arm a country that beheads people in the public square for things like drug smuggling and sorcery and witchcraft? You're going to arm a country that treats women as second-class citizens and says they can't drive and they need a guardian to go anywhere? Joe, what you do is indefensible. You are a complete and utter sellout corporatist. And you don't care about the actions that you're – the impact, I should say, that you're having on the world, the negative impact that you're having on the world. You don't care because all those arguments are complete and utter garbage. And to the idea that we care about civilian – you know, we care about civilian casualties. That's why we need to sell the weapons of death to the terrorists. We care so much about civilian casualties that we managed to kill at least 200,000 civilians in Iraq. We care so much about civilian casualties that 90% of the drone strike victims were civilians. Yeah, we care so much about civilian casualties. It's so obvious how much we care about civilian casualties. The lies that these guys tell themselves to sleep at night. Paulus Waringin would never vote to arm Saudi Arabia. We got to get Paulus Waringin in there, man. This isn't a question. Come on, you guys all know it. I know it. Everybody knows it. Everybody who's a reasonable person knows it. JusticeDemocrats.com/donate. JusticeDemocrats.com/donate. Let's do it. Let's do it. Let's do it. Let's get this thing done, man. We can't afford to have more Joe Manchins in there because he's the problem in the Democratic Party. His philosophy, his ideology represents the destruction of the Democratic Party. And don't give me that bullshit, West Virginia, he's the best we can get. Really? Is that why Bernie Sanders held a town hall in West Virginia with the room full of Trump voters and they gave him a standing ovation and agreed to Medicare for All and free college in Bernie's agenda? You don't know what the fuck you're talking about. The only way to beat the fake populist right is the actual populist left, not corporate sellouts like Joe Manchin. Okay. Joan Walsh is an alleged left-winger. She adores Hillary Clinton and despises Bernie Sanders and his supporters, so, you know, you determine how left-wing she really is. She recently decided to go after Ivanka Trump for how she was dressed at the G20 summit. Let's watch.
Being held to an unfair standard about the role that she plays or influence with the White
House. How? Well, no, not at all. I mean, I think Heidi's being really very, very charitable, more charitable than I would be. I think that there's one woman benefiting from Ivanka's crusade for women, and that is Ivanka Trump herself. That $50 million fund for women entrepreneurs is being controlled by her. The fact that she doesn't take a salary only reflects her own great wealth, thanks partly or largely to her father. And, you know, when she's tried to go to bat for us, allegedly, her solution to the defunding of Planned Parenthood was to tell Cecile Richards to stop performing abortions. You know, that was her brilliant compromise, which would hurt many poor women around the country. So I think the feminists, that women really ought to give up the idea that Ivanka is our person in the White House, because she's, if she is trying at all, she's completely ineffectual.
Well, also, it's a little muddy about not taking a salary while having the status of being a federal employee, yet not having to be held to different ethical standards.
Right.
Also saying that she doesn't want to be involved in politics,
she's
sitting in for
it.
Her father at the G20.
Right, with big bows on her sleeve. I mean, I don't mean to sound sexist. It can be dangerous to comment on what women wear, but the fact that she sat in for her father in a dress that was so incredibly ornamental was such a contradiction in terms. And I think that what we see is that in authoritarian societies, daughters have great value. They are property. And the message that she is sending about her own value, about her place in the White House, and about the place of women in this administration, I think are really pretty frightening. So.
Do you think you're opening yourself up about the vote?
Are you looking at Twitter yet? It's a pink dress with big bows on the elbows. There's something incredibly ornamental. That's not a dress that's made for work. That's not a dress that's made to go out in the world and make a difference. That is a dress that is designed to show off your girliness. And, you know, God bless her. Show it off. But don't then tell us that you're crusading for an equal place for women at the table, because you're not.
Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, I rest my case with Exhibit A on McFeminism. That's not feminism. That's McFeminism. It's fake feminism. It's about as real as the meat in the chicken McNuggets. Because look at the argument you're making. Okay, there's enough to criticize there with Ivanka Trump sitting in at the G20. You're the daughter of the president, and that is like the very definition of nepotism. You shouldn't just be allowed, you're related to the president, therefore we will say, we didn't elect a fucking royal family. This isn't like an authoritarian country. I can't just be like, here, I'll have somebody I'm related to sit in for me for a little bit. You can't do that. So there's enough to criticize there on nepotism grounds. But no, she had to bring in the worst argument I've ever heard. She's arguing that she's not modestly dressed enough. That's an argument made by Islamists. You know, look, you're not covering yourself. You're not modest enough. You don't look professional enough. Who are you to just criticize? If a woman wants to be girly, she's allowed to do that. But somehow you think this is more feminist of you? Let me critique what this woman is wearing. I don't know. You look too ornamental for my tastes. You know, you look like daddy's little girl. I'm uncomfortable with it. And this is not something that you should wear in a business environment. That's an argument. There was just a scandal the other day about how women were wearing sleeveless dresses. Female reporters were wearing sleeveless dresses in this area of Congress or the Senate where, you know, the dress code is strict. It's like in the back of the Senate or something. And people were like, it's sexist. You're telling these women you can't wear what they want to wear. That's just like the definition of sexism. And this is exactly what Joan Walsh is doing here. I'm not comfortable with what you're wearing. You should cover up. You should be more modest. How does she, like, warp her mind to thinking she's being more progressive or more feminine when she says stuff like that? Wouldn't equality be women are equal to make their own decisions? Wouldn't freedom be they have the freedom to choose what to wear? They have the liberty to choose what to wear and to not have smug commentators tell them what they should and shouldn't wear. God, this pisses me off. But to give you this is the level of seriousness and the intellectual capacity of the corporate Democrats and the establishment Democrats and the level of discourse that they're stuck at when it comes to talking about Trump and their family and their administration. There's so much to actually attack there. But when you bring up attacks like, I don't like how she's dressed, she's not modest enough, you made yourself look so preposterous and so stupid that you undermine people who are doing the real anti-Trump work, arguing against how much he's destroying the country with draconian policy, how he signed a bill that has a 6% approval rating that guts internet privacy, how his FCC right now is trying to ruin net neutrality, how, are you kidding me, he has billionaires in his administration. He appointed Goldman Sachs, and they wrote his fucking tax policy. Giant giveaway to the rich. He's increasing in Afghanistan and Iraq and Syria. But Joan Walsh has nothing to say about serious issues, so she critiques how Ivanka Trump is dressed and thinks that makes her more feminist. Go away. You ever have people who are supposed to be, like, on your side? Like, what do you mean? Yeah, she's kind of on our side, right? Isn't she like an ally? I don't want you. Go away. You don't deserve to be. You're not up to par. You can't. You drag down everybody. All she does nowadays, by the way, is say stuff like this and attack Bernie Sanders supporters. Because, you know, it was so sexist to not want Hillary Clinton in power because she's a woman. You know all you Bernie supporters who voted for Jill Stein? You're sexist somehow because you didn't support Hillary Clinton. It couldn't be that you didn't like Hillary because she supported the war in Iraq and that she wanted to do war in Syria and that she voted for the Patriot Act and that she was in favor of deregulation and she was too cozy with Walsh. Couldn't it be that? No, it's because you hate her because she's a woman, but then you went on to vote for Jill Stein. See how she really thinks through her arguments very much. Okay. Final story of the day. Bernie Sanders is on the road this week, and he's speaking directly to Trump voters about the disaster that is Trump care. He's the only Democrat bothering to go to all states in the country, no matter how blue or red they are. Listen to what he said about this. It's amazing the degree to which, in this country, in states like West Virginia and Kentucky, Democrats have, to a large degree, forfeited these states, conceded these states to right-wing Republicans, Sanders said in an interview before boarding a plane to leave to Kentucky. In many cases, or to leave Kentucky, in many cases, these are working-class states. These are states where people are struggling economically. The idea that Democrats would not be fighting and investing in and working with people in these states is, to me, beyond comprehension. He added, you don't win if you don't show up. Yeah, so this is a problem. This is a problem. Democrats, for a while now, I've just written off some states because, I don't know, too Republican, too red, we'll never flip them. You know who doesn't say that? Somebody who really believes in their message and really believes in the policies that they're pushing for. Because if you believe in those policies, you think it can resonate anywhere because you're very convinced of them and you think there's the evidence for them and you think people can come around to them. Is it really that difficult to convince somebody that their life should be improved? Because when Bernie Sanders argues for free college, and he argues for Medicare for all, and a living wage, and ending the wars, and getting money out of politics, and doing a new deal and fighting climate change, this is stuff that he thinks, how can anybody disagree with it? So of course I'm going to go to the deepest red places in the country and make the case, and I think I can get people. And guess what? It works. It works. So, yeah, go everywhere, Democrats. But see, so many people in the Democratic Party don't actually believe in their message. You know, they're kind of narcissistic and they're self-aggrandizing and they're careerists and they say the right thing sometimes, but in reality they're serving their donors because they want to, the more money they raise, the further they go. So they think along those lines. So, yeah, they don't really believe in a lot of what they're saying, so they're like, I'm not going to go waste my time in Alabama or Kentucky or, you know, Missouri or where. They're like, I'm not going to go to Mississippi. What are you, crazy? Whereas Bernie's like, yeah, I'll go anywhere. I'll go anywhere and let people know, hey, did you know that we're the only modern nation that doesn't get paid vacation time by law? Did you know that? He goes around and he says, it's interesting to explain these things. People don't know these things. Hey, look, I'm just letting you guys know you're getting screwed when it comes to healthcare. The rest of the world, there's no copays, no deductibles, no premiums, no nothing. It comes out of your taxes. Why can't we could do that. We could have the number one system in the world. We could do that. We just have to fight for it. We have to stand up against the corporate interests. So Bernie's 100% right. And maybe this is the reason why he's the most popular senator in the country, literally. Because people know, oh, he's authentic, and he really believes in what he's saying, and he cares. So even if people disagree with him, a lot of people go, you know what, I like him. I disagree with him on some of the stuff, but I like him. The last honest man in America. That's what it feels like whenever we talk about Bernie and what he's doing and what he's trying to accomplish. All right, guys, out of time. I love you, and we will see you tomorrow. Much love. Be back here, same time, same place. Peace.